Hello, everybody. Welcome back to our podcast, Exploring Entanglements. Today is our fifth and final episode, so we'll just be wrapping some things up. Today, we're going to be talking about the power of groups and sexual geographies. So I wanted to highlight a specific story from the book. It's in, I think it's chapter 9. It's called The Power of the Group. And it starts off with this girl. Her name is Jillian. And she is hanging out, I think at an apartment party or something like that, hanging out with a bunch of friends and a new person that she met whose name is Bobby. Jillian got to talking with Bobby and after some time realized that she was so engrossed in this conversation, she didn't realize that her friends and everyone else had left the apartment, which left her and Bobby alone in the apartment. And it just so happens that Bobby's apartment was the next door down. So already creating a little bit of an issue of sexual geographies, just because they were alone and Bobby's apartment was right there. There's kind of that pressure of needing or not needing, but like that pressure of a sexual thing might happen. And in the book, they explicitly say her friends, intentionally or not, had set up a sexual situation that they were in, and Jillian had felt that this situation had been sprung upon her, and like that she wasn't really like planning on doing this or whatever, but her friends kind of like made that choice for her. And it shows that this sexual situation is really social situation. Her peers were like making an effort to produce a sexual experience for one another. And I feel like that is a really common thing that happens where people kind of already, like your friends will already decide for you, like, oh, you guys are chatting it up, you're vibing, whatever. So they kind of like will leave you two alone and things like that. And then it kind of produces this like a little bit of a pressure that you might feel if you're in that situation.
Yeah, I think this happens so often actually, because you know, especially in college, because it's like you meet somebody and you're like, hey, do you have a friend for my friend? And like oftentimes it's not something like, you know, it's something you just like kind of ask, but you don't really ask like your friend if she wants like the guy that you're talking to like bring a friend for her. Sometimes it makes a person feel safer, I guess you can say, when you're like, hey, yeah, is it okay if I bring my friend? And then it kind of like unintentionally does sort of result in these situations where you're with somebody and, you know, you don't really like want to be with them too much. And then, you know, things start happening and you kind of feel like, okay, well, my friend's over there doing whatever. So maybe I should just, you know, be in here and just, I guess, try to have fun. But I think this happens so often in college because, you know, there's this like stereotype that college students just want to drink and have sex. And so, you know, I think it's so unfortunate because I think it's something that's not really like talked about within like your friend groups. And it can also be a little awkward when you're like, yeah, like, no, I don't want to talk to this guy. And I don't care who you're talking to, but I don't want him to bring a friend for me. Like, you know, sometimes it's kind of seem like as like, oh, you're being like a party pooper, but it is, you know, it's a little uncomfortable to talk about like within like your actual friends. And I think this is such a good point because it's something that happens so often, but so little is really said of it.
Yeah, I agree. Like, especially with, oh, like my friend or like this guy I'm talking to as a friend who like wants to talk to you or whatever. And you kind of just like get roped into that situation and it's awkward. And like you said, like you don't want to be a party pooper. So you're not trying to like kind of shut it down like you might if it was just like a stranger. But there's like that kind of like pressure because you see like your friend across the room, maybe like with the other guy and you're like, oh, well, they're having fun. So like, I don't want to interrupt them. So you just like keep the conversation going with whoever you got, I guess, stuck with essentially. And it's just, yeah, like, and I don't think in Jillian's case, it really led to anything, but she just kind of like felt a discomfort of like, oh, this decision was kind of made for me rather than like, I was telling them, oh, like, leave us alone, leave us alone. Like, it was more like they kind of were just like, oh, no, we see what you're doing and we're going to let you go. We're going to go do our own thing. And it left her in like a kind of uncomfortable situation. And yeah, I think in the book it says like nothing happened and she didn't like say that anything happened, but it just like, just that act alone is like a little uncomfortable to kind of have like your friends kind of put you in this awkward situation.
And I love that you said like, you know, you're kind of just like stuck with somebody, because I feel like that's what it feels like. I mean, I don't know about you, but I feel like I have been in this kind of position before where I'm like, oh, like I'm stuck with this person. And I know my friends are trying to, you know, like do their own thing, but like, I'm not really feeling this. And like, you know, some people don't have that, how do I say it? Comfortability, I guess, to like, you know, basically tell the other person like, yeah, like, you know, I'm just kind of chilling. Like, I don't really want to do nothing. But like, you know, in some situations, it can lead to people feeling like they're forced to kind of like go with the flow of things. But, you know, it makes them like, it puts them in this uncomfortable situation. So I can definitely see how in some situations, it could potentially lead to like very traumatic experiences.
Yeah, speaking of in like certain situations that like leading to more dramatic and traumatic experiences, later in that chapter, they talk about the story of this girl named Octavia. She was a freshman and she was invited to, they say in the book, one of the more prestigious frats on campus. And this made her feel like special and like she was chosen to go hang out with, you know, like the, I guess, the more popular frat. And then once she made it to the party, she was invited upstairs with a few of like the frat brothers. And this made her feel like she was part of like the in group. She like felt like super cool and, you know, like who wouldn't? But, you know, she went upstairs and had a couple of drinks with just, I guess, a couple of the frat brothers. And then after a while, she said it almost felt like it was on cue, all of them but one left, and like, so it left her alone with one frat brother. I don't think he was named in the book, but she didn't really want to stay up there, but she felt like it was kind of rude, or maybe she wouldn't get invited back if she had declined. So she stayed upstairs just for one more drink, she said. And then once everyone else was gone, the other frat brother started kissing her, and she said she didn't really mind that, but then he took it way too far and like removed her clothes and unfortunately sexually assaulted her in that time. But she felt like this was a plan among the brothers to like leave them two alone upstairs. And obviously like this relationship is so different from the story that we had talked about before where it was a bunch of friends, but this was kind of like she was in an unfamiliar space in somebody else's house. And like she felt almost like they had planned for this to happen, and she felt pressured by the space as well as the people who were in the space. So she felt pressured by all the other brothers who had left to stay up there because it was kind of part of this plan, and then also felt pressured by the one that was staying with her.
Yeah, I think this is also a situation that happens like often in college, especially when it involves, you know, things with like popularity or like, you know, these really like popular frats on campus, you know, and it's really like easy to understand why you would, you know, in Octavia's case, feel like, you know, you're being like special. And like they're taking a priority with you, inviting you upstairs and stuff. And so, you know, it's easy to understand why, like, you know, this would happen. Her, you know, her feeling like, okay, yeah, like I'm in this frat, and, you know, they're really cool around campus and I want to be here. And then like it takes an unfortunate turn when. And it's crazy because I feel like a lot of us have been in situations where it does seem kind of like pre-planned, like, you know, the way that they all left, that's like really creepy, you know? So in Octavia's case, you know, it's kind of like you're put in an uncomfortable position because it's like you do want to be here, but at the same time, you did not ask for all of this. You know, you didn't ask for him to start removing your clothes. You know, you come to a party to have fun, and you know, it's so unfortunate when you're put in this space, especially like the whole like upstairs type of thing. You know, you hear it in movies like, oh, they went upstairs, like you know what that means. So it's like this whole like being in this upstairs kind of space alone with somebody. It really puts kind of into perspective like, okay, well, this has the potential to turn into an unfortunate situation like Octavia's. So I do definitely think that the space that you're in kind of does contribute to like your feelings and to how, you know, things are gonna kind of play out. Because number one, being alone and then being alone upstairs, that's like a huge difference from being downstairs on a couch with like, you know, other people. So, you know, I think when speaking of sexual geographies, it's really important to consider how they can contribute to these, like, for this case, such an unfortunate experience for her.
Yeah, I totally agree when you said like that's creepy that they all left like that. Like that if like it feels like very like planned and very intentional, and it didn't seem like Octavia was kind of in on that conversation, of course, to be like, oh, okay, yeah, like I'm cool with you guys leaving. Like it was kind of just like they left and she was left there to, you know, like navigate that space on her own. And I think that really like brings in the conversation around like informed consent and like knowing what you're signing up for. And it seems like in this situation, like Octavia was not a part of the conversation before she was already upstairs, and she wasn't a part of the conversation like moving forward. And I think it's really important to communicate those things with the people that you're with. Like, if all the frat brothers had left and it was just the two of them upstairs, if the other guy would have just been like, oh, like we're alone now, like would you like to, you know, engage in some sexual activity or like anything. But it seemed like that conversation was just like totally like left out of her hands. And it was kind of something that like the frat brothers decided on without her being there. And I think like the part about sexual geographies as well is so like so heavy, like especially in that space. Like she was not in a space where she felt really comfortable. I don't know if she'd been there before, but it didn't really seem like it, like let alone being upstairs. And yeah, like what you said with like the connotation of upstairs, like in movies, like that's kind of where, you know, this stuff kind of tends to happen is like upstairs, away from everybody. And I think that she was unfortunately like almost like rendered powerless in the situation because she was in a space that she wasn't familiar with, and like she didn't really have a say, unfortunately, in the situation. So I think it's important to like, you know, keep this like conversation open and like make sure that, of course, everybody is involved in it that's going to be involved in this potential sexual encounter. But like, yeah, I just don't think she was even like in the know in the way that even the other brothers were, even though they weren't really involved, which isn't fair to her.
Yeah, and it also kind of makes you wonder, like, did none of like their frat brothers like ask themselves like, is this okay? Like, did anybody talk to her? Does she know like, you know, what your plans are? You know what I mean? I feel like a lot of the times we don't like just in any situation, but specifically in situations that can potentially lead to sexual assault. There needs to be accountability too amongst friends because, you know, I wonder, you know, what would have happened if just one of them would have said like, you know, did anybody ask her like if, you know, this is okay if she wants to be alone right now? Like, you know what I mean? Because I feel like, yeah, the way that they all just left like that, like if it was like planned, that's scary, especially to have been like alone in that situation. So, you know, it really does kind of tie into this, you know, kind of concept of like, what if somebody else was there to possibly make sure that this situation didn't end up in the situation that it did. So I don't know. I just feel like sometimes there's a lack of accountability amongst friends, not just like with men, but, you know, in general. I just feel like, you know, if one of the Fat Brothers would have been there and said, okay, yeah, like, you know, this seems kind of weird to you guys, doesn't it? Like, then maybe, you know, it wouldn't have ended up in the way that it did. So I don't know. That's just something that I think about a lot in these situations.
Yeah, I totally agree. And that's actually a perfect segue into what I wanted to talk about next. So, like, I think that's so important. And like, I'm so glad you brought that up of like, why were none of these other men like considering like, oh, maybe we shouldn't do this, or maybe we should check in with her first and make sure that it's okay if we leave and like leave them alone or whatever. That is really the role of somebody who is an active bystander in these types of situations. And even beforehand, so it seems like this was a conversation that they had before the party was even happening, before Octavia was even there. Maybe like they were one of them was planning on bringing a girl up and then the rest of them leaving. And like, why didn't someone say, oh, like, maybe we should check in with her? So before the event even happened, like, there was an opportunity for somebody to step in and be like, okay, like, let's think about this. Like, how would this come off? Like, I feel like so often, like, people try and figure out ways to, like, scheme to, like, get the girl, like, quote unquote, and, like, try and come up with these, like, elaborate ways to, like, you know, like, be with a girl or, like, be with somebody. And, like, in this, I guess, scheme that they were coming up with, like, why didn't anybody just like stop and think about this other person that they were going to be like subjecting to this like encounter? But I think it's really important to talk about like how we can intervene in situations like this, or if we hear somebody planning something that seems a little bit sketchy, or if we like see something like going on like right in front of us that's a little sketchy, like how can we step in and kind of like diffuse the situation and make sure that everybody's okay. So I just wanted to explicitly say like what an active bystander is, and that is somebody who says something when they see something, and they disrupt an event when they see somebody is being targeted. So in the situation with Octavia, one of the frat brothers could have said, okay, like this girl is seemingly like you're targeting her, like let's step back and reevaluate like our approach to this.
Yeah, and I think in, you know, being an active bystander is more helpful than you know in that moment. And you know, and sometimes it does kind of seem like, oh, I don't want to be in anybody's business, but you know, it's like you can, by being an active bystander, you're doing so much more for that person than you know. For example, in this situation, you know, preventing something like sexual assault from happening, that's something huge. And that's something that, you know, that person will be very thankful for. And so, you know, in talking about bystander and, you know, how to be an active bystander, there is this thing called 5 D's of being an active bystander. So, for example, the first one is to just be direct, you know. In like assessing the situation, you know, just confronting it, you know, asking yourself, is it safe for everyone, to, you know, that's in this situation? So for example, in Octavia's situation, one of the frat brothers could have, you know, just simply asked himself, is this okay? Is this going to be okay for her? You know, like, and so I feel like in that situation, definitely somebody could have been direct and could have for sure have asked at least themselves, like, okay, is this going to be a situation that's safe for everyone, especially Octavia, because this is not an environment that she knows.
Going along with the rest of the 5 D's, the next one is distract, and this one is one of my personal favorites. I think it's like the least confrontational and like just easy ways to do it. So this is just engaging the target. So this would be Octavia, like engaging them and ignoring the harasser. So you're distracting the situation to stop it. And another example of this is, I'll draw on my own personal experience. There was one time that I was at a frat party and I was just like dancing with my friends and stuff. And then I like looked over and I saw this girl and this guy, and the guy seemed to be a little too handsy, a little too much for the whole situation. And the girl looked a little bit uncomfortable. So I walked over to her and I was like, oh my God, I love the song. Like, come dance with me and my friends. And then when she was out of that situation, I was like, are you okay? Is everything okay? And she was like, oh yeah, like he just came up to me. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't know him. I don't know like who he is or anything about him. And I didn't really want to be in that situation. So I think like she found her friends, like the people that she came with, and like the situation was over. So like that's distracting the situation and just like bringing the person out of it.
Yeah, and I think that's, that's because, you go on Twitter and you see so many like instances where something like this has happened and has actually prevented a lot. And so one of the third D's is delegate. And so it's asking for help from a third party or seeking support from others to help defuse the situation. So I can kind of draw on a situation myself. It doesn't have to do with sexual assault, but being an active bystander can apply to a lot of different types of situations. But the one time I was actually walking back from the gas station, which is like 2 minutes away from my house, and there was this guy following me. It's like this older white man. He was in an alleyway. He was just, he was just out in the gas pumps, and he had no car or anything. So then I, being a woman at night, I smiled at him to make sure he wouldn't like try to murder me or anything. And then he starts following me. So I start like, speed walking, and he like starts picking up his pace. Then I actually run across the street, and what does he do? Runs across the street. So I see one of my neighbors that I don't really know too well, but I have seen a lot. And he actually happened to be Hispanic. So I told him in Spanish, like, this guy's following me. Like, can you please help me? So, he had his wife walk me back home. And it's crazy because this guy, as soon as I spoke to my neighbor, he turned around so quickly and went right back into the alleyway. That was probably the scariest thing that ever happened to me. But I'm so glad that I asked for help because, I feel like, in situations like that, it's kind of like awkward to like, ask somebody you don't really know for help. But like, just imagine if I would have, if I would have not asked my neighbor for help and he would have just gotten his car and went to wherever he was going. Like, I kind of had to like, kind of like not scream at him, but I was just like, can you please help me? Like, this guy's following me. And so, his wife ended up walking me home, which was super nice. But, in a situation like this, asking for help a lot of the times can be super helpful in preventing like such an unfortunate situation. So, in this like delegate D of the active bystander, don't be afraid to ask for help if you need it, because there's, you never know when somebody is in the same situation as you, and you just have to like do whatever is safe for you in that moment.
I really appreciate you sharing that. That it sounds terrifying. So I'm so sorry you had to go through that, but I'm so glad that your neighbor was like being an active bystander, like doing everything that he knew how to help. Like, I'm so glad that you felt comfortable asking for help in that time too. And that like he got his wife to walk you home. Like, that is so kind. And I think that's a great example of being an active bystander, because I mean, and with these things too, I feel like it's so hard to know like when is the right time to ask for help or like when is the right time to intervene. But I think it's just you have that gut feeling, and especially like if somebody's following you, that's pretty like obvious that that's very sketchy and that you need help in that situation. But sometimes like it, you don't really know like when is the right time to like reach out and ask somebody for help or to intervene in a situation that you may be witnessing. So thank you for sharing that. I'll move on to the fourth D of the five Ds, and this is delay. So this would be acting after the fact. So if a situation is going on and you don't feel like it's like safe for you to intervene in that moment, you would like maybe the next day, like talk to somebody, report it, or like check in with that person and be like, hey, like, is everything okay? Like, you know, just check in with them, or to report the situation like after the fact when maybe it's a little bit more safe for everyone involved to do so. And then I can just say the last D. And then the fifth D of the five Ds of bystander intervention is documentation. So this could be like recording the event, like taking out your phone and recording the event, or like just like making notes, or like taking note of like who the person was or like what they were wearing. And like this can be really helpful if like you do choose to report the event, that you have like documentation of exactly what happened. And like we said before, bystander intervention can be applied to so many different things, not just sexual assault. And one of the best examples that I can think of the documenting of an event would be in the too many instances of police brutality where people record the event happening to be able to report it and to be able to have that documentation of the event. Because we saw this in the case with George Floyd, that there was a literal like video evidence of what was going on. So it was almost indisputable. So that's another really important, like, I guess, way that you can intervene is taking a video or documenting the event, so that you have that and it's like indisputable evidence.
Yeah. And so, like, you know, in thinking of bystander intervention, it's just good to, you know, acknowledge that as a community, you know, we have a responsibility to keep each other safe. And so, you know, bystander intervention is, that's why it's so important, especially, you know, as college students, you know, we need to look out for each other. We need to make sure that we're all being safe, and that, you know, even when sometimes we're in situations where we're in the position where we need somebody to come save us, you know, just think about, you know, how thankful that person is going to be. And so, you know, it's a lot of just like, you know, caring about the people that are in our communities, and just making sure that none of us end up in any situation where we can potentially be harmed.
I think you touched on a really important point. It's like, just, we just need to care about the people around us. Like, we are really aiming to, like, especially on college campuses and especially within Westchester, like our work, we're really aiming to cultivate this community of care and like looking out for the people that are around us. And another like really important aspect of bystander intervention is the group mentality. So earlier we talked about like the power of the group and how that can negatively influence situations, but with bystander intervention, it can actually show the positive side of the power of the group, because if one person acts, other people will see that and like kind of go in that group mentality and be like, okay, like I'm going to help too. Like, you're setting a really good example for those around you, of just like caring about other people and like stepping in when needed, or like just, you know, just like stepping in when needed and just like caring about the people around you. We encourage you to intervene and check in regularly with those around you. If you see something, say something. And we are actually offering some programming around bystander intervention coming in the fall. It's called RAM Step Up. And it's basically just covering bystander intervention and how you can learn to become an active bystander.
So, you know, just, you know, to understand that you're not alone in these situations, and there's a multitude of resources that are available so that we can all make sure that we're dealing with these experiences in the right way. So actually, Dana brought up this resource to me. It's called Psychology Today, and it's basically like a therapist finder. I haven't used it yet, but maybe Dana can say a little bit more about, you know, how to navigate it.
Yes, I love talking about this because I actually used this to find the therapist that I'm currently seeing, and I thought it was so helpful. So if you literally just type into Google like Psychology Today Therapist Finder, it'll be like the first link that you see, and you can go in there and put in a bunch of like it's I equate it to like online shopping for a therapist because you can go in and put in all these different filters and it'll give you therapists that like meet your criteria. So this is anything from like the insurance that you use, or if you don't have insurance, you can choose a provider that uses a sliding scale. You can choose what type of therapy that they practice. You can choose specifically like what types of issues they engage with. You can also choose like their age, their like gender. You can choose like so many different things. So it'll literally just give you a list of all the providers in your area that like meet the criteria and what you're looking for, which I think is so important, because it really helps you like find exactly what may work for you.
Yeah, so I think, that would be super beneficial for somebody, especially if you have a certain identity and you would really like your therapist to share that with you, that identity. And so I think that's a great way of finding a therapist that is right for you. There's also the Rape, Abuse and Incest National Network. And so this is a national hotline that connects you with the trained staff member from a sexual assault service provider in your area. And so the number is 800-656-4673.
There's also a crisis text line that's available. So you can just text START to the number 741741, and they'll connect you with a crisis counselor that you can just chat with like short term. I've texted this number before. Like it usually is really helpful. They'll try and just like work through like your crisis at this time with you. And it's free. It's usually like really quick to get connected with somebody. And I think it's really helpful to be able to text somebody rather than call because it's just easier depending on where you are. Like if you're out or something, you can't like be on the phone or, it's just support that's there for you like whenever you need it.
And if you're local to Westchester, the Westchester Counseling Center is also here for you. And their phone number is 610-436-2301. And you can learn more about the online services they're offering right now due to COVID. But, the Counseling Center is great. I would encourage everyone to go there if you need support, especially if you're, local to Westchester and a student.
Okay, and the last local to Westchester resource that we'll share today is the Westchester Crimes Victim Center. They have a sexual assault hotline that you can call if you've experienced sexual assault, just to, like talk about it, and see your options and like what you want to do about that, whether that's reporting or just ch talking to somebody. And their sexual assault hotline phone number is 610-692-7273. And we just wanted to give a couple of special shout outs and thank yous to everyone who made this possible. Natalia, we wanted to thank you so much for being a part of a few episodes. We also wanted to thank Jennifer Hirsch and Seamus Khan for writing Sexual Citizens and giving us a great jumping off point for these conversations that we've been having over the last couple of episodes. And I also wanted to thank Sasha so much for being my co-host. And I also wanted to thank the Center for Women and Gender Equity for making this all possible.
Aw, yes. Thanks to Dana for being the most amazing co-host ever. You're so insightful, and I appreciate all the time that, you've put into this podcast. And so, don't forget about us. Follow us at the Center for Women and Gender Equity social media accounts. It's CWGE on Instagram. And we push for inclusive and comprehensive sex education. And we try to use this information to make meaningful actions. So if you're interested in being just, more aware and more connected with us and the center in general on campus, don't forget to follow us and hear about our upcoming events. So thank you so much to everyone that's been listening.